You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, August 1st, 2016. My name is Michael Brooks, and I'm Michael Monday on the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Mark Ames, co-host of the War Nerd podcast, noted journalist and Russia pro, will talk about the relationship between Donald Trump and Russia. And in fact, the deeper relationship between Republican operatives, including Trump's campaign manager, and Putin and the oligarchs that run that country, what their interests in Eastern Europe are, and how they're trying to influence the political process. Also, Mike Pence, John McCain, others pathetically trying to scramble away from Donald Trump's ongoing smears of the Khan family. Any statement like that that doesn't end or begin with, "and that's why I'm crossing party lines to endorse Hillary Clinton," is meaningless. We'll have some fun with some of their sniveling. Also, why do the IMF and the World Bank continue to inflict brutal austerity on Africa, even when they come out with reports every couple of years, it seems like, saying, like, actually, austerity is a bad idea. Doesn't work that well. And speaking of counter-austerity, is Abenomics working in Japan? We'll look at what The Economist has to say about that. And also, Russia and Iran deplore Hillary Clinton's hawkishness. But the Israeli right is worried that she's too dovish, too peace-loving. And we'll contrast the shifting poles of both parties towards Russia. Governor Ed Randell admits that during much of his time as governor of Pennsylvania, they did not take into account environmental and public health concerns enough when they promoted the hydraulic fracking. I was going to say revolution, but that seems like a weird word to use for poisoning your groundwater to juke up the stocks of some questionable energy companies. A little bit too late. Maybe Ed Randell will loop back on his thoughts on Elizabeth Warren's fitness to be vice president about 8 years as well. We'll also be taking your calls, your IMs, as we continue to decompress from the convention season. Sure, we'll get all of your thoughts. Donald Trump is, of course, already trying to hustle his way out of debates, and Melania Trump's nude pictures have appeared on the cover of the New York Post, and some are speculating that this is Donald Trump's way of saying no mas to the Khan family. Can everybody talk about my leaked pictures of my wife, please? Instead of me having a black soul and no ability to empathize. Matt, what's going on? The reason I don't say what's going on to Kelly is because she's not here.
Not a whole lot. I think I'm still reeling from
Okay.
It's been a heck of a weekend. I think, you know, it doesn't, if that is true about Trump releasing these pictures, it doesn't inspire confidence that they're already going to this. I mean, how many nude pictures does he have? I mean, and this isn't something you can keep going back to, I don't think. Otherwise, it just normalizes the release of nude Melania pictures.
You tell the Chinese premier that if he can go two down on tariffs, I will give him a private Melania file.
That's what greases all the deals.
It's how I make deals.
It's nudes.
It's nudes. I mean, it's great.
Fresh 2 Dope Boys dropping tomorrow. More iTunes and Stitchers reviews. Everybody knows that's available, and it's really getting a great response. As always, I'm really excited about that. And I'm also excited to get to Mark Ames. But first, I got to tell you about today's sponsor. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place is not enough to find the quality candidates you need to run any business. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job to all job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city, industry, or in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. One more time, you get to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. There's also a link to it on our homepage. Get the right candidates for your business today. And we will be right back with Mark Ames on the Majority Report. Appreciation of the motherland there. I'm Michael Brooks on the Majority Report. Joining us now is Mark Ames of the War Nerd podcast, also the founder of Exile, which really in the 90s was actually the best place, the go-to place for information on what was really happening in Russia, which helped set the stage for understanding what's happening arguably in some ways in the United States and the globe today. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, okay. How you doing? Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Yes, it is.
The return of the 90s.
Yes, it is. I don't have anything to add to that, Mark. I always enjoy talking to you, but I'm always talking to you for really disturbing reasons.
Yeah, I know. If you're talking to me, something bad's happening.
Yeah, exactly. It either involves like some like Wyoming trust fund, like oil magnate who's funding like anti-Semitic hippies as part of a front organization to like deregulate water, you know, water wells, or it involves like some type of like Russian mafia cartel that makes, you know, Dick Cheney be like, wait a second, shouldn't we value human life more?
Makes a human out of Dick Cheney.
It makes a human out of Dick Cheney. That's the type of disturbing thing you get on. So, but you know what, Mark, what's awesome about talking with you about this stuff is that, you know, this Russia thing has popped up in the last couple of weeks. And it's been no kind of secret to anybody that Donald Trump, like many other right-wing political figures in the United States, has a kind of weird admiration for Vladimir Putin. And he's, you know, kind of openly called on Russia for its support. He's endorsed Russia policy goals. But you take this back a lot deeper. You go back to a piece that you actually wrote in 2008 for The Nation, and you talked about McCain's Kremlin ties, which is fascinating because, you know, John McCain had the reputation sort of the opposite of Donald Trump. Like, he was kind of itching for a new Cold War in between all of the hot wars he wanted in the Middle East. But you kind of explained through the network of lobbyists and strategists around McCain that these are people that are carrying water for the Russian oligarchs and therefore the Putin government. Explain those connections, what that story was, and then lead us up to understanding how those same players are connected. Some of those same players are connected to Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to start off, it's like the old line from The Godfather. It's just business, Sonny. you know, there's
Sonny
the
could never understand
blathering.
That, though.
Yeah. Look, the simplest way to put it is the lobby firm Davis Manafort. We all know now Paul Manafort is the campaign manager, campaign chair for Trump. Davis was the campaign chair for John McCain in 2008.
Yep.
So they're the same guy with the same clients doing the same business. So we wrote about, now granted their candidates have very different public postures towards Russia. As you said, McCain, especially in 2008, you know, McCain and Sarah Palin, even they were talking about really heating up a new Cold War with Russia. Palin had even said that she thought America maybe should go to war to protect Georgia after the 2008 war in Georgia, which is the Southern Republic just south of Russia. But that's because that quite likely is because Palin was being coached by another lobbyist, Randy Shuneman of Orion right. Strategies, whose main client was Mikhail Saakashvili, the president of Georgia. So he had
yep.
these competing lobbyists. But what Davis, the Davis Manafort, you know, Putin, Ukrainian oligarch link with McCain, really all kind of centers, or a lot of it centers on, well, centered on Ukraine to a certain extent, but really Montenegro. Montenegro is the kind of seaside republic. Was once part of Yugoslavia and then sort of joined with Serbia. And it's basically known as Moscow on the Mediterranean. It's very small. It's got a population of just over 500,000 people. Very beautiful. And, you know, up something like 40 to 50% of the real estate there today is owned by Russians. Their main, pretty much their only industry is a large dinosaur aluminum plant, KAP. It's under dispute now, but it was bought out by a very close to Putin oligarch named Oleg Deripaska. He's sort of the aluminum oligarch of Russia, or one of the two aluminum oligarchs. So Deripaska in 2005 went in and bought what is essentially Montenegro's industry. And in 2006, the next year, Montenegro was holding an independence referendum to go independent from Serbia and to get kind of faster track EU status. And the thing is that a lot of the oligarchs, and presumably Putin, because the oligarchs, guys like Deripaska, don't say peep without Putin's approval. They wanted Montenegro to go independent. These guys were throwing all their money in. They were getting passports in Montenegro, a lot of them. So this would give them EU status. If it broke free from Serbia, it would give them EU status. It would, give them a foothold in the Mediterranean. And who should be lobbying for independence for Montenegro? But Rick Davis of Davis Manafort, John McCain's campaign manager and the partner of Donald Trump's campaign manager. And that was successful too. Davis was also hired by Deripaska, the Russian aluminum oligarch, that same year, 2005, to try to get him a visa into America because he'd been blacklisted from getting a visa to enter America ever since I think certainly since the early 2000s, maybe a little earlier.
Mark, get back to him, but could you explain the 1990s, like the aluminum industry in Russia and how this guy rose to the top of it? And just give us a sense of, like, what does that business actually look like?
Yeah, so of all of the really violent and, you know, blood-spattered privatizations and industries in Russia, really aluminum, even within Russia to this day, is still notorious as by far the bloodiest, scariest, most violent, the most corpses, you know, just a bloodbath. And a series of oligarchs would take it over and then get chased out or killed. And another one would come over and they'd get chased out or killed. The aluminum industry there is huge. It's, if not the world's largest, certainly one of the world's largest aluminum industries. And so Oleg Deripaska, who, if you look at his pictures from like the early 90s, you'd see him in tracksuits, you know, like your typical kind of Russian mafia guy. He's a dude in a tracksuit. Right. You know, 10 years later, he's a multi-billionaire in Forbes. And that's from taking over one big part of the aluminum industry. Incidentally, the other part of the aluminum industry was taken over by Viktor Vekselberg, one of the two or three richest Russian oligarchs today. Vekselberg also got into oil and other things, but Vekselberg was the guy who wound up coming to Gawker's rescue.
Right.
And he also has given money to the Clinton Foundation.
Right. Right.
Hold on a second. Hold on.
Hey, you hear the music?
No. I was
hey, all right. All right, no problem. So anyway, so moving forward, so we have a sense of who this guy...
I said too much, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was a little scared that there were a couple of guys from Brighton Beach that were rolling up on you.
Yeah, you hear the helicopter blades?
Yeah, I do. Like, we must finally stop Ames. So what...
So Deripaska was barred from America because of his role in threatening the lives of two major Russian aluminum investors.
Right.
There were RICO investigations, RICO charges out on him, money laundering charges out on him in Germany, you know, other charges in Britain. And so he was barred from coming in here. So Rick Davis, who's again the partner of Davis Manafort, Paul Manafort, Rick Davis, McCain's campaign chairman, decides to take his money, to take Deripaska's money, and try to get McCain, John McCain, to help Deripaska get a visa. So, he manages to work people like Bob Dole and a whole lot of these powerful old guard Republicans, ex-senators, senators, lobbyists, and he's allowed in America very briefly, like for a couple hours, in order to sign a World Bank loan agreement in one of his businesses,
and to go to a very prestigious event as well.
Yeah, it's the Carnegie Foundation. He's given money to Harvard. I mean, it's very bizarre. But then that really winds up upsetting other people in the State Department who find out. So he really needs to get this thing like officially lifted. So he goes back to Rick Davis, and Davis then brings Deripaska the January 2006 Davos World Forum meeting. Davis brings Deripaska into John McCain's villa, and we don't know what was said there. And then about 6 or 7 months later, McCain goes to Montenegro to celebrate his birthday. This is where Davis and Manafort are trying to help push through Montenegro's independence referendum, which does pass. And this is a year after Deripaska's basically bought out Montenegro's industry. And Deripaska is brought to John McCain's birthday party out there by Rick Davis. And
No, I mean, so that's the sort of, and this is incredible when you're looking at, especially in the context, going back to the craziness of that campaign, that you had on one hand, essentially, this potentially very dangerous belligerence in terms of Georgia and the Baltic states actually being pushed by another lobbyist representing Georgia. And then on the flip side, you have sort of like the Putin and the oligarchs gang, and which ends up with, you know, John McCain partying in Montenegro with these people while at the same time he's talking about how, you know, he's the only one who can really handle Russia. Now, let's get to the Manafort angle, because he works specifically with Ukraine, the former Ukrainian leader who was deposed in 2014. And he's really made it, maybe even beyond Rick Davis, like, other than, in fact, coming back and working for Trump, he's essentially been, you know, marinating in oligarch money for a very long time. He's also a veteran, guy who worked for Mobutu Sese Seko, guy who I believe also worked for Marcos. He's a go-to dictator rep.
Well, yeah, and on top of that, you know, this lobby firm, Manafort, Davis, also had comma Stone at the end, and that's Roger Stone.
Right.
He kind of seems to move in and out with these guys. So they're all, you know, this is a big-time Republican firm. They do a lot of – they have absolutely zero, I don't know, like – they're so amoral, they make buzzards look like, you know, angels. I mean, these guys will eat anything, swallow anything, do anything for money, you know. And Manafort worked for Yanukovych, who was – but, you know, here's the thing. So he worked for Yanukovych, who was the very corrupt, Putin-backed president for a while of Russia.
Of Ukraine.
Ukraine. And Yanukovych was the guy who was overthrown in the 2014 Maidan Revolution in early 2014 in Ukraine. He was extremely corrupt. On a level that all Ukrainians, including even the people I knew in the East part and the pro-Russian ones, they all just said, this guy is like, he's so, even by our horrible standards, he exceeds everything. You know, right. So the guy had like no backing from anybody. But, you know, what if you're a lobbyist with absolutely zero compunction, morals, anything, that's exactly the kind of client you want.
Right.
With McCain, it looks really weird because with McCain, it looks like you're playing. It's hard to understand. If McCain has principles, there's no way he would mix up with these guys, let alone have them running his whole campaign. So with McCain, it's like, honestly, it was very confusing because McCain was about supposedly being principled, particularly on Russia and foreign policy issues. He's like kind of a principled interventionist.
Well, I prefer demented old warmongers who stick to their principles personally. But that's just
exactly.
Me.
Exactly. I'm saying that's how he is, right?
Right.
How he's supposed to be. And what I find kind of risible is that all these neocons who thought that they were steering, you know, the SS McCain and they were totally on board and they couldn't wait until they took power, they didn't care. They didn't say peep about the McCain campaign's deep ties with Putin oligarchs and these pro-Putin politicians in Ukraine.
Right.
And pro-Putin oligarchs in Ukraine. They didn't say, it didn't bother them a wink.
Right.
Now they're acting like Trump is, and I've never seen like liberals join so eagerly, jump on this bandwagon, but they're calling him a traitor. They're saying he's a Manchurian candidate, a mind-controlled, puppet of this Kremlin sorcerer. And yet it's just the same lobby group that was in the McCain campaign, which is running the Trump campaign.
And is the difference now, Mark? We'll get to that in a second. So, because I do want to get specifically to Trump. So specifically with Trump, we know that he sort of personally, through his own, various ventures and whatever his various business things are, we obviously don't have a great sense of what that actually entails. But he definitely has, Russian investors and various real estate projects. He's, expresses, I guess, another distinction on a superficial level would be that unlike someone like McCain, he professes a a lot of admiration for Putin. And even some of the things he said that kind of get bracketed as like, oh, he's just being crazy or he doesn't understand the world. Well, you know, comments like the Baltic states are not living up to their obligations and I don't know how I feel about NATO. Those, you know, obviously could be construed as signals, you know, to Russia. So I guess before we get into the whole like Manchurian candidate thing, which to me, like, I mean,
I would take issue with some of the characterizations you made there. I mean, number one, Russian investors.
But wait, hold up, just one second, Mark. Just one sec before you
talking almost like,
hold just one second. But would the and tell me where I'm wrong in a second. But just would the distinction be that as far as, you know, setting aside the Russian investor thing, but as far as like this lobbying group and these sort of pro-oligarch policies, all we see now in the context of this Republican campaign is that there isn't the countervailing influence of another lobby group that is pushing for, as an example, belligerent foreign policy on behalf of Georgia. Is that the distinction you're saying?
I mean, how wonderful that we, you know, that what we hope from our candidates have, is have competing lobbying groups.
That's what it sounds like.
Competing sleazy lobbying groups. Yeah. I know. But first of all, like Trump is a scumbag. Okay. I mean, I think it just goes without saying he's a xenophobic scumbag.
Right.
You know, and that's about as nice as I could say about him. But that's separate to me from what I think has been a very deliberate attempt by the Clinton campaign, worried about this, about their election chances, to basically jump on the xenophobia bandwagon and reverse it. And in this country, there's no like Russia lobby. So they're stoking anti-Russian xenophobia. He has Russian investors there, and all Russians are criminals and xenophobes,
right,
and under the influence of Putin. Therefore, if you do business with a Russian investor, you're a traitor to this country. Potentially, you're subversive. You're suspect. So that I object to. And the numbers. The second thing is, for me, the question is, why is it that what Trump is saying is catching on? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm being rhetorical there. I think if you go around the country and you get away from the Acela corridor, I really don't think a new Cold War is popular in this country at all. Mm-hmm. I don't think people care. I don't think, and I certainly don't think his base cares. I don't think, I haven't seen polls that show that people want war with Russia.
Oh, they totally don't care. I mean,
you know,
they don't care at all.
I don't think they care. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, the only distinction I draw, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, Mark, is I think that like the appetite for war and for belligerent foreign policy is very limited across the board. But I do think that the main thing with Trump, and we've said it for so long, is just attitude and disposition. Because to be fair, you know, look at like some of the same people that are going to say, like, on a superficial level, you know, Trump is tough and he doesn't take anything from anybody. They're going to listen to him say in his way, like, hey, you know, I like Putin and he's a good guy and we can figure things out. And then they're going to listen to Obama,
really,
right? Oh, thank you. They're going to listen to Obama and Obama's going to be like, look, let me be clear. And they're going to say, that's not tough enough. That's not tough enough. Even though from a policy point of view, you might actually say, wow, like Obama has certainly been, you know, at the very least observing our, you know, our NATO obligations, right? Like this has not been a dovish approach at all, but it's all in the attitude. It's all like if you come out and you, you know, are the big orange dude with the marmalade face and you're just like, we're going to be great friends. That's no problem. That's tough. But if you're like the cerebral, sinewy, you know, professor who is from a, you know, quote unquote exotic background, well, you know, Obama could come out today and say, look, if Putin says one more thing about me, I'm gonna, you know, put a friggin' drone at the Kremlin, and people would still be like, eh, too weak. Why not a stronger weapon? So I think a lot of it actually just has to do purely with attitude, nothing to do with policy, one way or another.
I disagree.
Yeah.
I honestly disagree. Yeah. I mean, in general with Trump, attitude, yes, I agree with that. But I think I think he's taking, he's a populist. I mean, he's a right-wing populist. And he's finding that these positions, which are not allowed really in like standard media discourse to say, like, it's not really allowed to argue and say, you know what, don't want a Cold War. You know what, the expansion of NATO was a bad idea.
Right.
It was a belligerent idea.
Right.
Russians loved, I mean, I was in Russia in the early 90s, and I saw the change of the attitude from the beginning of the Clinton administration, which is when I went out there, to when the Clinton administration left in the end of 2000. I can say when I went out there first, Russians literally, it was almost embarrassing. Like, they were almost groveling. They thought that everything we did was so great. How could they imitate us? How could they be more like us? And by the end, they were, so, you know, after the economy, the medicine that we, you know, sort of administered them, turned out to be absolutely catastrophically ruinous. The Clinton administration oversaw all this. They oversaw the 1996 completely fraudulent vote that put Yeltsin back in power. The average life expectancy of a Russian male in the 90s dropped from 68 years to 56 years.
Jesus.
I mean, literally millions of people went to their graves early. The entire financial system completely collapsed in 1998.
Because of the same austerity, neoliberal garbage that it always
does. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, like it or not, when we decided to bomb Serbia and carve away through force, whether you agree with it or not, without it was illegal. It was not sanctified by the U. Or it wasn't voted on by the UN. It wasn't approved by the UN. We unilaterally did that as NATO. We carved out an independent state that still does not have a lot of backing from a lot of countries in the world. We set a lot of precedents, and we ended up then with nationalism and Putin.
Yes.
And so it's a very failed policy.
Well, that's always the dynamic, right? That neoliberalism and austerity, you know, facilitates or is the sort of, you know, the dynamic tension of sort of like garbage neoliberalism and dangerous far right populism. Those are the sort of poles of sort of dysfunctional and perverse governance we're locked in. But I get the last question I have on Trump, and then I actually do want to get to the Clintons for a minute before
All
we
right.
jump. But is that so? I feel like the distinction you're trying to draw, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm just trying to summarize the thoughts here. So on one hand, Donald Trump, because of the particularity of who he is, and we can debate how influenced he is by, you know, anything, frankly, from foreign money to just what he seems to admire, right? Like, he digs Saddam Hussein on some level. He digs Vladimir Putin on some level. He talked about the North Korean leader. He's like, you know, that's a young kid. I mean, wow. You know what I mean? Like, whatever the hell is going on with him.
I
mean, we need to figure out. Yeah. That was one of his better ones. But that, you know, so for whatever the reason it is, he's articulating things that are not allowed in the sort of, as you say, the Acela corridor, the bubble, and that is, you know, you can condemn Putin's government, you can have all sorts of issues on human rights and this and that, but the reality is yes, like, why the hell would you want to ratchet up another Cold War? And also, let's look contextually at what happened in the 1990s that we were part and parcel of to build up to all of this. He doesn't really talk about that part.
The Clintons
specifically,
yeah.
The United States, the Clintons, and certainly World Bank and IMF. But then on the other hand, you're also saying that this is that the extent to which he is advocating a kind of pro-oligarch position is just an extension of the work of one Republican lobbying group that has had major influence on all sorts of Republicans, including ones that would take, you know, quote unquote, superficial stands against Russian autocracy.
So here's the thing again, what I'll say is this. I actually don't know where Trump deeply stands on anything because he has no record. He's a populist now, but when he takes power, he might be something completely different. The guy's going to want good TV.
Right.
So, you know, there was this incredible story that part of it came out through the emails already, but Der Spiegel fleshed it out more about Philip Breedlove, the former NATO commander who who, you know, he loves riding motorbikes and Harleys, and he loves war. And after things started heating up in Ukraine, between Ukraine and separatists and Russia in 2014, he ran around trying to arm the hell out of Ukraine and turn it into a big hot war. And Obama kept putting a lid on this guy and doing everything to block him. And the Poles were ready to bring in a bunch of tanks, and the Pakistanis were ready to bring in a bunch of TOW missile systems. But Obama and Merkel, but everybody wanted at least a tacit, indirect, you know, approval from Obama, and he didn't give it. He thought that was nuts.
Yep.
Now the question is, would Hillary Clinton go with the generals? My sense is yes. I hope not, because I think she's going to be president. But my sense from what I've seen of her and her attitude towards generals and war in general, she doesn't, from what I have seen, go against these people. She genuinely likes them. She likes sitting down and drinking with them. She likes their attitude. She has a lot of respect for them. I mean, there was just that huge, you know, New York Times Magazine piece on that. Would Trump says he postures as an anti-interventionist. I personally don't buy it.
Right.
I think he's going to go with whoever's blustering best and what's going to make the best TV, you know.
Those guys who were advising him, once the checks dry up, they would advise for what makes the best TV as well. I mean, one of the most, and again, this is just, you know, this wasn't confirmed, but there was a French report a couple years ago that, you know, that one of the reasons Sarkozy was so adamant about getting rid of Gaddafi was that there was going to be reports then Gaddafi might even publicly reveal that he had like personally bankrolled Sarkozy's first presidential campaign. Now, again, it's not confirmed, but at the same time, it wasn't like reported in the French, you know, Alex Jones website. It was reported on a real European investigative news site. And the point being that there's no loyalty here. So even if you're hinging on like, well, Paul Manafort and those other guys have all those oligarch connections, so maybe, you know, Trump will be less belligerent. Don't bank on it, because there's no ethics or continuity to this. It's all about ratings and money. The final, and I think that's an important point, the final question I have for you is, okay, so you already alluded that Hillary would, and I agree with you, it's one of the reasons that I preferred Obama to Hillary to begin with, is I do think he's a bit more, you know, kind of circumspect about war in some ways. In terms of just Russian...
Don't do stupid shit. Is that his motto? Don't do stupid
shit. Yeah, that's
shit.
His motto, and it's not a bad motto. Not a bad motto. And I think one that we will increasingly appreciate no matter who's president in several months. But who, you know, do Russian oligarchs writ large, money coming from that part of the world, and just in the sense, not of particular, like, you know, evil, dangerous Russians, but just in the sense of any other kind of oligarchic force influencing American politics today, do they also have a home and a hearing in a Clinton administration? And if so, what's the kind of, you know, connections between those dots as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, Viktor Pinchuk, big time Ukrainian oligarch, has given, I don't know, somewhere between $10 and $25 million to the Clinton Foundation that we know of. If you look at by donations by country, Ukraine, you know, which is one of the poorest and most corrupt countries in the world, is the largest by country donor to the Clinton Foundation. Viktor Pinchuk is the son-in-law and basically the business arm of the former president, Leonid Kuchma. Kuchma was seen at his time, Kuchma was seen as the pro-Russian guy and the pro-Putin guy up through 2004, and he was with Yanukovych up through 2004. Pinchuk was on that side too, his son-in-law. And these guys were behind the beheading of Ukraine's most beloved and best investigative journalist in 2000. They still haven't found his head to this day. You know, their recordings were released of Kuchma saying, you know, make sure he's gone. They're like somebody calling him saying, we've, you know, done the job. And he's like, make sure he's gone. I can't remember the exact details of the phone conversation, but it was leaked. And so he's directly implicated in the beheading of this investigative journalist. So Pinchuk is the son-in-law, basically the business arm of this really corrupt one-time pro-Russian president who was basically told, as was Pinchuk, I think, in 2004 and 5 during the Orange Revolution, if you guys don't go with us, I told by Bush and by the West, if you don't go with us, you're going to start seeing Interpol warrants out for you. You're not going to get financing. You're going to have sanctions. You're not going to be able to, you know, sail your yachts around. You're going to have a lot of problems. So these guys saw the light and they decided to switch sides to the pro-Western side. That's who the Clintons are in with. It's just, can you say that's marginally better than the pro-Russian oligarchs? I don't know.
Oh, infinitely better. I mean, I think clearly when you look at that, you look at a real commitment to human rights, transparency.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the largest donor to the Clinton Foundation, and Pinchuk played a role in the Maidan Revolution. And look what's happened since then. You've had a brutal war. You have a government that's run literally by an oligarch. The chocolate and media oligarch, and he's held on to all of his media holdings, and he's in bed with far right ultra-nationalists, people who worship Nazi collaborators. I mean, it's so insane. It's for another show, but it's just so. And they're now renaming streets after guys who slaughtered Jews, and I'm not kidding you. And that's the only way they can kind of keep this thing together. You have 10,000 people dead. The economy is in a complete free fall. You have about 2 million people displaced in Ukraine. And this is the result of the Maidan Revolution. They're talking about now another one because this one's already turned bad.
The liberals and the left got marginalized out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the reality that the harsh reality is it's going to take the left in a place like Ukraine probably decades to come back because of the experience under the Soviets. Yeah. Except really in the Russian, pro-Russian parts of Ukraine, where there is still a strong old left and kind of young left as well, mm-hmm. Sensibility. But for certainly any Ukrainian nationalist anywhere west of Kyiv, leftism is identified with communism, and it's illegal now. It's actually illegal in the country to in any way speak good of or positively of Soviet Union, Soviet symbols, and communism. And it's illegal to denigrate the memory of the World War II Nazi collaborators who were officially rehabilitated.
I mean, those guys did a great
job. They're
very
anti-communist.
I mean, I think they did a great job.
I know, exactly. Great guys.
I mean, look, and all of a sudden people are saying these horrible things. Meanwhile, I mean, I don't know. I thought they were good.
Choose your fascists there, you know? They're all great fascists.
Sad.
The Russian side and the Ukrainian side.
Yeah,
great bunch of guys.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand. I think we could all get together and just at some type of human harvesting convention with Peter Thiel. I mean, he's doing amazing things. It's true.
That's right. Drink the blood. Yeah.
Yeah, drink the blood. Well, Mark Ames, always, brother. Learned so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks,
man. It's interesting this time. That we can say. It's definitely more interesting than if it was, Bush v. Clinton. But we may come to regret interesting times. Interesting times are good for journalists and radio shows.
Yes.
Usually not quite as good for everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Mark. Have a great day. I'll see you soon, man.
Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. All right, everybody. We are going to go to the fun half, where the number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. Subscribe to Two Dope Boys and a podcast on iTunes. That's the number 2. Dope Boys and a podcast, or listen to it on Stitcher. Give the Majority Report a review on iTunes. It helps us. Check out our Majority Report kickback page, which is where you can use our Amazon link, shave a couple of pennies off of Jeff Bezos's profits, or use Jet.com, which is the socially responsible alternative to Amazon. Been getting great feedback about that service. Become a member of the Majority Report today at majority.fm/become a member. The IMs are open. The phone lines are open. See you all on the fun half.